G'day, g'day, g'day. Welcome back to English History, Fact and Fiction, episode the 217th, Armada exclamation mark. My name's Sig Newman. Let's get on with it. Yeah, back to Vivaldi in spring. Not that it's spring in theory, it's definitely not spring in theory, but like the last few years, the plants don't seem to know it. They reckon it's spring. I reckon it's still winter. Who knows? Last week I took us back in time once again because there's just so much to try and hang together. So my original desire to just stick with one timeline's out the window. No careful long-term planning in this podcast. Raleigh has become Sir Walter in 1584 after his successful mission in scouting out a bit of America to call our very own. Wherever the permanent settlement is to be, it needs to be a place with resources that can be shipped to England. That'll take time, so his immediate plan is to set up trade with the locals by periodic shipping. The second expedition will have a fair whack of hard men, not because of the locals, we're worried about the Spanish. Spanish Phil will be annoyed if we look to make a colony. Spanish had massacred those Frenchies in Florida in 1565. Then in 1568, the English had fought that Battle of San Juan de Alula. That was the John Hawkins and Francis Drake thing, where Drake was suspected of cowardice after leaving Hawkins and his ship behind. The Spaniards did not treat the English POWs too kindly. But right now we're all good to go, and Betty will tell Walter he's not allowed to go. He's her new toy boy, and she doesn't want to be parted from him. By the way, that schoolboy history I got that Walter first met Betty when she was about to step in some mud, and then he, gallantly added to the years, put his cloak down on the mud for Betty to step on. Yeah, zero evidence and probably a later invention to say how marvellous he was. Back to the expedition, which will now be commanded by Sir Richard Grenville. Just to show that it's not only the nobility who are inbred, these sailors are all related. That Humphrey Gilbert was Raleigh's cousin, and this Richard Grenville is Raleigh's cousin, and Francis Drake is Grenville's cousin. Our sailors then are one big happy family, except Grenville hates Drake. Happy news is that Grenville and Raleigh get along really well, so it's Grenville to go to Virginia, named by Raleigh, for our Virgin Queen. Going home with him will be those two native guys who we brought to England last time, and we promised to take them back after a year, and so we are. We're in America, and our English will visit other local towns to see what's there. 3 days later, they come back to the ship, and one of the locals had stolen a silver cup. Grenville will demand it back, but it isn't coming back. So, of course, the English will destroy crops and houses with the locals running away. Yes, that happy first start we got off to is no longer happy. It was a cultural thing for the Indians, and there you go, cultural mistakes made already. For the Indians, you steal something to prove your bravery, and for them, theft of an item doesn't warrant crop and house burnings. No, no, no. What the Indians expected was the English to sneak in and steal some of their things. Then we can all be truly manly together. Those two local guys who had visited England had different reactions. One had gone straight back to his tribe saying, "Hey, look, these English are total fuckers. We should see them off." The other one, though, stuck with the English. He'll do a deal with the chief's brother for the English to construct a settlement on Roanoke Island. The English will be out on a sortie and run across some of the Roanoke's enemies, kill about 20 and bring back the captured women as presents for the Roanoke. Now the chief's brother is rather pleased about the gift of women, but he can now see the power of the English. With the fort constructed, Grenville will be off home, leaving some guys behind at the settlement. On the way, he'll stop into the Spanish gift shop or heavily laden treasure ship and pick up about 10,000 pounds of gold and silver, and about the same again in goods. This little trip has turned into a profit. Now, also hanging about is Bernard Drake, who will knock over about the same amount, well and truly paying for the next trip to Virginia. That's Bernard Drake, not Francis, just to be absolutely sure. He will also capture Pedro Sarmiento de Gamboa. He's one of those guys who'd been sent to capture Drake around California. He's a naval commander, navigator, map maker and coloniser. He's done some terrific work. Grenville will treat him very poorly, but once he gets to England and meets Raleigh, then they will be BFFs. Pedro is not a huge fan of his own country. He's had a couple of chats with the Inquisition and been bailed out because he's a valuable operator. He and Raleigh will be on about magical stuff, and this Pedro guy will be one of the founders of the Rosicrucian thingy, that thingy that sucked money out of my mum's bank account for years. Betty will send Pedro off to see Spanish Phil with peace, love and lentils message. He'll get a passport to come back to England any time he wants to. The Huguenots, though, will find him and toss him in the slammer for a year, and by that time it's too late for his peace, love and lentils message. War will have started. That all sounds good, but we're starting to wonder if colonisation would be as profitable as privateering. One's a long-term investment, with the other being a fast earner. Raleigh is preparing the third expedition and also chatting with Francis Drake about a nice side trip to get more Spanish treasure. Back to Roanoke Island, and our first colonialists are exploring and will make a rather good map. Spring 1586 and food shortages will hit them. Spring was a lean time for the locals too. They were only just starting to plant their maize. English will start to demand food from the locals. Worse, of course, the locals are suspicious that those English out exploring are making treaties with the Roanoke's enemies. And fair enough, they were. They had captured a chief from nearby Choanoke. This guy had 700 warriors and he's a smart cookie telling the English where they can get tons of pearls. The chief will be ransomed back to his people, but they exchange his son. English want to go where the pearls are located. Roanoke will warn them that those tribes are doing deals together to destroy the English and the Roanoke as well for being friendly to the English. April and the fishing is back on, with the locals providing fish to the English. The English, though, are incessant with their demands for food, so the Roanoke will say, look, fuck you, and stop giving them any food. Back to the cultural differences, and the Roanoke just can't understand why there's no women with the English. Who the fuck's going to plant the crops or cook the dinner? They knew from those two tourists that there are women in England, but why didn't they bring some? Are these English total idiots? The English, on the other hand, have no idea why the locals have stopped giving them food. All they can do is split into groups to live apart and fend for themselves on whatever food the little groups can find. Locals will also reasonably suggest that this god creature put up by the English is pretty fucking useless. If the English can't even feed themselves, what's the point of this god? The English will convince themselves that the Roanoke are plotting with other tribes to kill them. Of course, like the English that they are, it will be a preemptive strike. Off they go to the village and open fire. The chief will be hunted down and have his head off. And there you go. Raleigh's plan for a peaceful coexistence is right off the rails. Fortunately for the English, in comes Francis Drake with a number of ships. 29, in fact. Spanish Phil had struck back by seizing some English grain ships, and Betty wants revenge. She's even committed to a stupid foreign war in the lowlands, promising 7,000 hard men to fight the Spanish. Right now, though, it's to be Drake to attack by sea to get Phil's eye off the lowlands. Betty's idea is that Drake's expedition will pay for itself, plus return cash to her. Spain's cash flow that it needs for war is to be captured. Sounds like a good plan, don't you think? Let's look at the numbers. Cost of the trip, £40,000, with Betty putting up half. Anticipated return, £1,000,000, with half to Betty. She can then spend that money on 100 big fat warships and fund the army going to the lowlands. Now, Drake has a pretty lengthy plan, and he knows where the Spanish keep their goodies. The plan is to end up sacking Havana, where the English can set up a base. Then Phil would have a serious problem with the Americas. First port of call is Santo Domingo, where the Spanish have a mighty fortress to stop any attack from ships. Drake will just park his fleet up the road and head on in to find that nobody's looking that way. They know any attack would be by ship, so they're watching the water, but Drake's on land. Good news is that Drake is straight in. Bad news is they didn't have much treasure, £6,000. Off to Carter Jenner, who were expecting him. Drake and 1,000 guys will head to the town to find that the citizens were busy running away out the back door. The two groups will meet, but no Biff. Both will make a dash for the town, with Drake getting there first. Town taken, and the commander will later be executed for not putting up a fight. Still, not a big mob of treasure. Drake will score about £24,000 on this one. Now, we've got big mobs of men all together on ships, and that will bring sickness. Next step in his plan, which was to meet up with those Cimmeroons in Panama to take the treasure house again, will be abandoned. Off to Cuba, but now we see how well fortified Havana is. That plan's also gone. They will hang around for a handy treasure ship, but none will come in. That's when they head off to Roanoke, hoping to spot a ship or two on the way, but nothing. Drake can stop on the way to attack St. Augustine. It's the place where the Spanish had slaughtered the French colonialists. Drake will take it easy peasy, with the Spanish running away, then taking whatever he could and destroying their fruit trees and crops. He'll send gifts to the locals. The Spanish will be lucky to see a supply ship coming in soon and probably saving the citizens from an attack by the locals. The Spanish didn't care that much. The colony was failing to be self-sufficient, and so it was just an expenditure item. It was taking up about 20% of the budget for the defence of the Americas. The Spanish have actually worked out that colonising America is a bad idea. These little settlements are unsustainable. So, in fact, they give zero fucks about the English on Roanoke Island at the moment. They think it's just bound to fail. Let's get Drake then to Roanoke and find the colony in disarray. We've stuffed up relationships with the locals and need to move a bit north to try again. Storm and ships will be breaking their anchorage. One ship full of colonialists will be pushed out to sea and just head back to England. The remaining guys will hop onto whatever ship they can, but some will be left behind. Back in England, and the declared income will be £70,000 only. Still, Drake also stole 240 cannon from the Spanish. Spanish Phil will spend bigly on increased fortifications and ships to patrol the area, and he's back into trouble with the banks. Florence Savoy and even Big Papa Pope will refuse his loan applications. English pamphlets will play this up as a mighty victory, and hey, look, the Spanish are not invincible. Fair enough, Drake had knocked over some Spanish fortifications with little problem. Francis Drake, by the way, had got married again, this time to a young hot heiress. He's doing well in the social climbing. Spanish merchants are demanding Phil do something about the privateer problem. England will find lots more Drake copycats going and harassing Spanish shipping. No shortage of investors for this stuff. In Europe, Protestants' morale is up. Pope Sexy Five will promise Phil 1 million crowns if he can get the Duke of Parma's army landed in England. Francis Drake and others will be constantly on to Betty. We need to hit Spain now, so hand over cash for ships, guns and men. Betty, though, can see the bigger picture. Why take on Spain, who are the only ones who can keep England's traditional rival France out of action? And hey, don't forget, I'm not the richest monarch in Europe. I don't want to be my sister or brother or dad who sent England broke. Betty has managed to pay off the royal debts, revalued the debased currency and created a reserve fund. Novel idea. Full marks for fiscal responsibility, but her income isn't that much and lots of people want it. Drake for ships, Dudley for the Lowlands War, the Dutch want cash, the Huguenots want cash. Everybody's asking. That reserve she built up has recently been reduced by about 80%, spending on stupid foreign wars. Betty also had a low tax policy, so she could ask for more, but again, she can see the bigger picture. Low tax rates means more cash for individuals to invest, and that's why there's no shortage of investors for the privateers who are harassing Phil at no cost to the government. Betty probably should have raised a big fat tax, but she also does not want to be beholden to Parliament. She doesn't like that. They usually want something, a bit of quid pro quo, and Betty thinks that these guys aren't too bright. She might have to give them something that she really doesn't want to give. March 1587, and Drake will get a new commission. Go out and stop the supply ships heading to Lisbon. The depot fulfills Armada supplies and intercepts ships with lovely treasure heading to Europe from the West Indies. If you find that the Armada has already sailed, then intercept it before it gets to England. Drake will put the pedal to the metal to get going. Betty has developed a habit of changing her mind at the last minute. And sure enough, just after he'd sailed, in came a message saying no going ashore to belt up Spanish or their stuff. Yeah, too late. Yeah, a little bit of music there from the movie Betty the Golden Age with the Armada stuff going on. It's not that good, is it, really? It's not like the old days of John Williams or John Barry. They really revved you up with their musical scores. And what I'm trying to do is rev you up for one of the most important naval battles in English history, the Spanish Armada. So if you've seen the movie and you can remember the scenes about the Armada, well, you'll be expecting something pretty fucking glorious, poor you. But let me not be too negative. We're going to get off to an amazing start. Drake had just knocked out a letter to Walsingham. The wind commands me away. Our ship is under sail. God grant we may live in his fear, as the enemy may have cause to say that God does fight for Her Majesty, as well abroad as at home. Let me beseech your honour to pray unto God for us, that he will direct us in the right way. Haste. Now, Drake will keep the pedal to the metal, getting to Spanish waters ahead of his fleet. He's always in a rush, Drake, isn't he? He wants to rush in. It's Cadiz, and Drake is not here to fuck spiders. No reconnaissance, no check of the defences. He just wants to get stuck in to a crowded harbour. His 2IC will say, hey, perhaps we should have a think about this. Fuck, that's his Drake, let's go. Drake will sail in with no flag showing. Nobody's going to challenge him. This is a rather busy Spanish port with lots of ships, so one more doesn't matter. Besides, they know no enemy is just going to sail on in. That would be stupid. Finally, in come a couple of galleys with hard men to have a look-see. They see English and start backpedalling. So it's up with the flag, and one of those galleys will cop a direct hit. In come another 8 galleys, and off go more cannon, and off go those 8 galleys. Ships in the harbour are weighing anchor to run away. A big old Genoese warship will decide it's going to have a go. Drake would have liked to capture that ship, but it's going to be stubborn, so he'll sink it. Spanish on shore all running to the safety of the castle. 26 dead in the rush. 2IC will say, okay, Drake, you've made your point now. Let's get the fuck out of here while we're still alive. Drake isn't interested in getting out. He wants to transfer cargo from abandoned ships, then set them on fire. His fleet is by now catching up. In the early hours, they will find the Admiral's mighty flagship. That's the Spanish Admiral's mighty flagship. It's full of iron, so just set fire to it. 2IC will again go to see Drake, but he's off with the lads exploring the captured ships, so the 2IC will decide that he's in charge and order a withdrawal and will head out of the harbour. Drake's going to have to send 6 ships to be with him. He can't just leave the silly fucker on his own. In come the Spanish reinforcements, but really, all they're looking at is a heap of burning ships. About 39 ships on fire. It's time to be off, but no wind. The galleys will come in and have another go, but cannon will see them off. Drake will name this particular adventure the singeing of the King of Spain's beard. And he's back to superstar status. What's Pope Sexy got to say? The king goes trifling with this Armada of his, but the queen acts in earnest. Were she only a Catholic, she would be our best beloved, for she is of great worth. Just look at Drake. Who is he? What forces has he? And yet he burned 25 of the king's ships at Gibraltar and as many again at Lisbon. He has robbed the flotilla and sacked San Domingo. His reputation is so great that his countrymen flock to him to share his booty. We are sorry to say, but we have a poor opinion of this Spanish Armada and fear some disaster. Yeah, so Pope Sexy thinks that the Spaniards are in for a disaster. On the other hand, Drake is totally confident of a mighty victory. Drake's done well, but he's also seen the preparations Fuller's making and will write a danger warning Will Robinson letter back to Walsingham. Drake's sailing further south to see if he can disrupt more shipping. He needs a base to anchor, let the guys off, sort out provisions and so on. Cape St. Vincent would be nice, so why not just take it? The 2IC will write a strongly worded letter of complaint to Drake. You never listen to we smarter guys. You just do whatever you want. Here's a list of reasons why we shouldn't attempt taking Cape St. Vincent. Yada blah, yada blah. Drake doesn't want this shit. The 2IC will be demoted and confined to cabin. Drake will then just take an impregnable castle at Cape St. Vincent. Not all ships were at anchor. Some were up and down the coast, destroying any ships they could find. Drake will slip off to Lisbon, where the fleet is now assembling, and block the port for 2 days, driving some ships ashore. Drake will dare Admiral Santa Cruz to come out for a fight. Now, Santa Cruz doesn't have his guns mounted, so all he can do is be angry. The Venetian ambassador will write, "The English are masters of the sea and hold it at their discretion. Lisbon and the whole coast is, as it were, blockaded." Spain's operation has been suspended. Now, the Spanish think he's looking to starve them out, and then, suddenly, he's just gone. He's off to the Azores. Words out that treasure ships are there. Now, this has led to criticism by historians. He should have stayed and tried to destroy the entire enemy operation. But part of his brief was also to knock off treasure. So, fuck you, those historians. He's got to bring Betty a profit on her investment. Off we go to the Azores. Storm, ship scattered. That one with the former now locked up 2IC will mutiny, putting the captain in a pinnace and sailing for England. Meantime, Drake will spot the San Felipe, which is one of Phil's very own ships, the biggest, best one in his fleet. The Felipe had been out with its sister ship, the San Lorenzo, but that had sprung a leak. So the Felipe has double cargo. Oh, what a prize. Rather tricky. Drake has 2 ships with him, but this thing is bigger than all 3 combined, with lots and lots of nice cannon. Drake will sail on in and suggest they surrender. They'll open fire. Now, the English had sailed in nice and close in their smaller ships, so the shot's just going way over their heads. English cannon is nicely placed, so a few holes will be made in the Felipe, and that's it. They'll have to give up. So this thing had that double cargo of goodies from the East Indies. Pepper, calico, cinnamon, cloves, ebony, silk, saltpeter, jewels, plate, china, indigo, nutmeg, and of course, gold and silver. Absolute jackpot. Drake will transfer the Felipe's crew to one of his ships and say, "Yeah, be off with you," while an English crew will take the Felipe and head on home. The English will be totally amazed by this, absolutely amazed. And this is where you have the foundations of the East India Company. Oh dear. Despite Drake's success at hampering the Armada enterprise in Portugal, it is actually this capture that will slow the Spanish down for about a year. They were reliant on this big pile of stuff to keep the cash flow going. Betty has gained an entire year to make further preparations. Drake can come in to see Betty and get a good hard talking to. "What the fuck, Drake? I told you not to attack that Spanish film." This is pretty much for the media. Send that message overseas that this attack was not authorised by the English government and Drake has been a bad, bad boy. They probably had a very nice party and a good laugh about it afterwards. Betty's just picked up £50,000 and Drake's picked up £20,000. And that's only the official numbers. Along the way, Drake had also taken who knows how many slaves. We don't know how many. But it's a few hundred. Mixed bag, black guys, Native Americans, Turks, Moors. As usual, jobs are going and some of the Muslims joined his crew. They are experienced sailors. The Native Americans were to be dropped off in America and the black guys he planned to take to Roanoke to help with the colony. and we think he might have dropped him off there, we're just not sure. Basically, anybody who just wanted to be dropped off somewhere on the way was free to go. Now, with those black people that may have been dropped off at Roanoke, our English history will not acknowledge anything other than white people colonising America. Of course. There is another possibility, and that is the dumped them off in North Carolina, where we were looking to go after Roanoke. A people known as the Maroons will certainly be found there next century, and these guys are a mix of Africans and Americans. Our history says that those black people, the Maroons, must have been runaway slaves. Raleigh, incidentally, may have lost a bit of the colonial bug because he's now heard of the legendary El Dorado, the City of Gold, in South America. It was that Pedro who had told him about it. Raleigh will send four boys to get themselves to South America to learn the language so that he'll have translators when he gets there. Francis Drake will be straight after the mutineers. Some sailors are innocent, he reckons, so they'll get cash, but the 2IC deserves no mercy. Drake will bring charges of poor discipline, overcaution and cowardice. 30 officers will back him up. The 2IC will survive the charges, but only just. Now, this guy had a distinguished record up to this trip. He will be given charge of Betty's Galley and will wander up and down the Thames for the rest of his career. But right now, it's up to Spanish Phil to redeem his honour. To the Betty movie with some Spanish film music. Here's Phil's take on things. This is a defensive, not an offensive war. Straight into the bullshit, aren't they always? Yeah, we're only defending when we go off. One in which we are defending our sacred religion and our most holy Roman Catholic faith. One in which we are defending too, the land and property of all the kingdoms of Spain and simultaneously our peace, tranquility and repose. Yeah, see, for me, it's still a matter that if you go to another country to attack that country, then that is not a defensive war. Spanish admiral and mighty naval hero from previous mighty battles, he's done very well, this guy, Santa Cruz, will die. Phil will appoint Alonso Perez de Guzman El Bueno, Duke of Medina Sidonia. He has zero battle experience, lacks in self-confidence, and has told Phil the Armada thing will fail. I do not feel well enough to go on board, because I am aware of the little experience I have of being at sea, which I find is a torture to me because I have a lot of humours. Also saying this is a bad plan will be Alexander Farnese, Duke of Parma, and leader of the ground forces to invade England. Okay, let's circle back to make sure we've got the right background to this little party. Way back, nearly 100 years, 1489, Treaty of Medina del Campo between Spain and England, and we're all good buddies. Fast forward 50 years, and the mad Welsh king certainly seemed to get on better with Super Sausage Chuck than Frankie Big Nose of France, so it's still going well, with Henry also married to the Spanish chick. In comes Bloody Mary to make Catholic great again and marry Spanish Phil. She dies, and here's our Gloriana, with Phil proposing to her. She says no, but we're all still good. King Henri of France died a year later, 1559, with Catherine de Medici taking over. Frenchy sailor types thought that she was totally piss-weak as a regent, so started attacking Spanish ships in the Channel, looking for plunder. England decided, action, take no action. No help at all to their trading partner, Spain. Worse, English sailor types thought, hey, why let the Frenchies get all those goodies? We should attack Spanish ships too. 1563, and the Spanish government in Flanders break off communications with England to teach Betty a lesson in letting pirates operate against Spanish ships. 1565, and the Protestants go a bit nuts in Flanders and the Lowlands, and some of those were those English Calvinists who weren't welcome in Betty's England. For Spain, these are heretical religious fanatics, so in comes the Duke of Alva, hard man. At the same time, the Council of Trent had finalised its part in the Counter-Reformation, ensuring that there was a nice split between Catholics and Protestants. 1568, and we grab that gold, meant for the Duke of Alva, and Phil is very annoyed. Retaliation happens against English property in the Lowlands. Tension is ramping up, and our privateers have started on the West Indies. Francis Drake might have been a nice gentleman privateer, but the word in Spain is that other English are doing the raping and killing usual stuff. 1572, to highlight the difference between the two religions, we get the St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre. Phil's guys will then win that mighty naval victory against the Ottomans. 484 ships with 173,000 men between the two teams. Epic battle. 4 hours with 61,000 dead. That's 4 guys per second. We Europeans have had nothing like that. Now, it was supposed to be a mighty Christian victory over Islam, but in fact, it was a mighty Catholic victory. No support from the Protestants. Catholics are pumped up while Protestants are becoming more distrustful. 1573, Betty writes a well done lad to Phil for that victory, and hey, how about we sign a nice document saying we're all good with each other. Violence is ramping up in the Lowlands. Duke of Alva is out with Alexander Farnese, Duke of Parma in. Betty can spot a good operator and is worried. We've had a mercenary army in there helping out the Protestants working under Sir John Norreys. His granddad was that Henry Norris who had his head off for allegedly banging Betty's mum Anne Boleyn. Sir John had been in France fighting for Coligny and the Huguenots, and in Ireland under Walter Devereux, helping to massacre women and children. He'd taken volunteers to the Lowlands, just naughty boys being boys, to give Betty plausible deniability. She supplemented their cash and paid for non-English mercenaries, and the Spanish know that, but we all pretend it isn't happening to keep relationships good. That's not a basis to keep a good relationship. Sir John will do well. One of his victories will be to take a town where he goes all hard ass on it, using that brutality he'd learned in Ireland, and he'll be known as the English Fury. Big hit in the English popularity polls, but cash will be a constant problem. Now, Robert Dudley had gone on a diplomatic in 1585 where the locals offered him the governorship. Dudley will say, oh yeah, great, I'll have that. Betty will hit the roof. No way will we be having an Englishman in charge in the Lowlands. That would absolutely drag England into a war with the Spanish. Alexander Farnese, Duke of Parma, will besiege Grave with Dudley riding in to save the town and totally fail. Garrison will surrender to the Spanish and angry Dudley will execute the garrison commander. Dutchy types are becoming rather wary of Dudley. He can go on to be a dick with the diplomacy stuff with the Dutch. More battles and our young poet Philip Sidney will be killed. 31, died in a stupid foreign war. His funeral will almost bankrupt his father-in-law, Walsingham. Huge morale blow for the English. Alexander Farnese, Duke of Parma, will besiege the English garrison at Sluis, and the Lowlanders will say, fuck you lot, English, you're on your own. Dudley's venture is a dud, and he's broke and ready to go home. Just like the US and Iran fighting a proxy war in Syria, we've been fighting Spain in a proxy war in the Lowlands. What we've learned most recently from all this is that the Duke of Parma has the best army in the world. Professional, disciplined, and led by a very good operator. In the meantime, Phil's expanded his empire with Portugal and a nice big whack of Africa, and of course, the West Indies and America. If England or anyone else wants to expand, then it will have to be places where Phil thinks are his. Now, Betty hasn't got the cash to build a navy to take on Spain, so it's privateering for some nice plunder. Phil will be thinking it's time for his English enterprise to go and build up Betty. The Americas are just too big to police and keep the English out. What's your plan then, Phil? 150 warships, 40 supply ships, 320 auxiliary vessels, 86 rowing boats, 200 landing craft, 16,612 crew, 55,000 infantrymen and 1,200 cavalry, which would take control of the Thames estuary, seize London and then conquer England. Yeah, sounds like a plan. That will be changed to sail from Lisbon, get to the Low Countries, then barge the troops over to England. Yeah, that's getting a bit complex now. We should always remember that plan set by Joan of Arc in any situation. Just go in and hit hard. Well, maybe not. Didn't always work for her or Harry Hotspur, who had the same battle plan. Meantime, Phyllis found a nice fortified place to start building his fleet. Well, he does have to knock up a castle first. Assembling the troops will be a big process, so it can get started. Guys have to come in from all over the empire. Now, lots of these guys will get stuck on board a ship for a long time, and we know what happens when men are all bunched up together. Sickness, which leads to delays, then that leads to supply problems, and so that will close the big old circle of life to give more sickness. Thousands will be sick, and lots will die, including the guy in charge of the operation. 63-year-old, ton of experience, very handy operator, but now he's dead. April 1588, and we're good to go. But bad weather. 30th of May, and okay, this time we're off. 3 days later, and we've gone a whole 5 miles. Oh, here comes the wind. From the wrong direction, and we're going backwards. Day 11, though, we've managed to get 100 miles along. One of the problems sailing into a headwind is that you need lots of space. But these guys have got lots of ships and not lots of space. Letter into Phil. The voyage with so many ships inevitably delayed, both because of the weather and because the need to wait for each other, about which there is no choice, especially for the supply vessels that are so unwieldy and difficult to sail, as I previously described to Your Majesty. Also because the provisions on board for so long have gone bad, rotten and stale. I find myself in a lot of difficulties with the men without being able to do anything about it, and a large pile of supplies has had to be thrown overboard. Otherwise, it will just make the men ill. Our Admiral, the reluctant Duke, will have to stop and send for food and water. But he needs lots and lots of food. He'll wait 3 days, then reluctantly continue on without getting those supplies. Storm, so back to the harbour to wait it out. Not all ships will get to that harbour. About half the fleet will be scattered. Here's the Admiral to Phil. The fleet has been divided and has suffered, and as a consequence, it is so lacking in strength that it is inferior to the enemy by far, according to those who know about these things. For many of the most powerful ships, including 2 galleasses, are missing, and on the ships that are here, the men are sick and will continue to get struck down very quickly because of the state of the provisions. This puts us in a very poor position. Do not allow Your Majesty to be deceived by anyone who tells him otherwise. This thing is not going well at all. A group of 8 ships will forge ahead towards England, thinking the Armada is ahead of them. Some will return to Spain, even though there's a very good chance that they'll be executed. Others will head to the Scilly Isles off Cornwall. In England, Lord Howard, our Admiral, is complaining that he should be off to attack the Spanish fleet, taking that Dom Antonio, the guy who thinks he should be King of Portugal. Betty is saying, no, no, no. She wants to defend, not attack. And, hey, look, that policy's going pretty bloody well so far. Our sea dogs have been chamming at the bit to go out and fuck the Armada right up wherever they can find it, even if it's in Phil's backyard pond. The English had the same logistics problem. Bring in food and guys, then Betty would just change her mind and say something like, hey, the Duke of Parma just sent me a nice letter. We might get peace instead. This looks like typical Betty wanting to save money, but the effect is that our guys aren't stuck in one place so that they can get sick, and the food gets dispersed rather than sitting around to go rotten. Point being that when we finally get going, it will be with fresh guys and fresh supplies. This Admiral Charles Howard, like our Spanish Duke Admiral, is untried in the sea battle stuff, but he's got a lot going for him. He's a sailor, but only in the English waters sailor, but still he's a sailor. He's the grandson of Tom Howard, 2nd Duke of Norfolk, who'd been Lord Admiral. He's the one who went batshit crazy at the Battle of Bosworth when his dad, John Howard, was killed. Best of all for our Charles Howard is that Drake will be his deputy, and Charles Howard knows how to listen and learn from Drake's advice. It's a perfect combination. Drake's got the smarts and Howard's got the title, the authority, the dignity and the admin skills. It's a top team. Spanish Admiral will send a ship to find his lost ships and then tell him to come to that port he's in, Corunna. It's not far from the Scillies, which had been the designated place to meet if we got scattered. Slowly they come back in. Now the English had heard that the Spanish ships were at the Scilly Isles and made a mad dash to find, oh, they're gone now. Spanish sailors, though, were taken ashore due to sickness. The Spaniards had built a first-class hospital ship, but it's leaking. Okay, fresh food coming in for the Spaniards, barrels are repaired and refilled with water. Men will have to go ashore to do the confession thingy and get that bit of bread without yeast. Admiral will write to Phil pointing out that clearly God doesn't want this thing to go any further. Nah, says Phil, I'm really good at getting God's messages. He's saying keep on going. Sorry, Phil, I think he's reminding you that he's English now. 2 months after setting out, 21st of July, and we can see the English coastline. And looking back at them is Captain Thomas Fleming, pirate, who had recently nicked a ship. An English ship. The naughty boy, and the authorities want him. In he comes immediately to be arrested, but first he'll give us the news. The Armada is here. Fleming was firstly off to find the commanders of the English fleet, and he will find them playing bowls. Lots of these guys will now rush off to their ships, but Drake will say, as my school teacher taught me, so you know this is wrong, there's plenty of time to finish this game and beat the Spaniards too. Yeah, it's a King Alfred and the Cake story, or Robert Bruce and the Spider, or George Washington and the Cherry Tree incident. There is no credible authority for the bowls thing. The story turned up in 1624, and it might be more about Spanish incompetence than Drake's cool and calm reaction. It's a story for we common smellies to cheer us up when it's our turn to kill Spaniards we've never even met. Light the beacons, and by evening the news has spread all the way to the north of England. The Armada is here. Tension is wrapping up in the movie Betty the Golden Age. Admiral Howard's squadron will set sail from Plymouth. Howard will say that the world has never seen such a force as that big old Armada. Wind is on Team England today. Spanish ships are heavy, English ships are light and manoeuvrable. Spaniards will change from full steam ahead to combat positions. Howard will attack the northern part while Drake attacks the southern part. The warship and rather scary San Juan will become isolated from its squadron. In comes Drake's revenge, Hawkins' victory and Frobisher's triumph with 4 more support ships. The San Juan would be a great ship to send to the bottom. That Spanish captain is smart. He knows his best plan is to attack. This time he's got the wind, so other Spaniards will be sailing to help him and then they can inflict serious damage on the English. He will send some cannon and bullets towards the English, and they can see they're falling into a trap, so it's run away for the English. First sort of victory then to Spain, not much. After about 4 hours, the English will withdraw, and the Spaniards will continue their way to rendezvous with the Duke of Parma. 2 Spanish ships will collide, and one's a write-off. Another ship will make a rather bad mistake, resulting in its magazine exploding, smacking that ship to smithereens. About a third of the cash to pay the guys is gone. This might be a good time to mention that action that we've seen previously, which, say, involves one of Drake's cannon Sending an enemy ship to the bottom was usually done on a relatively calm day, with the opposite ship at anchor or boys sneaking up on a ship getting right on next to it. Firing cannon from one moving ship at another is unlikely to do much. The best you can hope for is to kill some crew or disable the ship to a point where it surrenders or you can board it. With your martyr, there's no sneaking up on them, and you may not want to get too close. It's full of soldiers with guns. In any case, the Battle of Plymouth, big deal that it was, is over. The Armada has survived the attack, but now the English weakness is kicking in. Supplies of powder and shot are low. At this stage, Spanish Admiral Reluctant Duke is supposed to send a couple of ships with hard men to the English coast to secure it for the proposed troop transports from Flanders. He'll say, yeah, not going to do that. And our Admiral Howard will be rather pleased with that decision. His mission is the Armada, not rabbiting back to England to defend peace of the coast. The English fleet are just following the Armada for now. Message from the Spanish to the Duke of Parma. Nearly there, mate. Alexander Farnese will send word to the troops to get yourselves to Dunkirk now, my brave boys. During the night, a big old Spanish warship will fall behind. It had lost the foremast and bowsprit, and the mainmast was damaged. A couple of small English ships will come in, exchange some shot, but then be off. They're too small to take this thing on. In comes Francis Drake and says, hey, you guys, surrender. What terms, asks the Spaniards. Oh, I've got no time for chit-chat, but I'm Francis Drake, so you'll know you'll be treated well. The Spaniards will be happy to surrender to the greatest seaman of the times. In come the big dicks from the Spanish ship to Drake's ship. Drake will give them a nice banquet while his men go treasure hunting on that Spanish ship. And yes, there's lots of treasure. And lots of rich, unsupervised sailors now. Some of that treasure, though, will get back to Drake's ship. With Drake making that stop-off, the rest of his ships will try to follow the Spanish, but without their leader, they're not doing too well. Admiral Howard will wake up to find that he was a bit too close to Spaniards, and where's that fucking Drake? Nowhere to be seen. The English will meet up, and Howard will say, where the fuck you been, Drake? Oh, I just captured a Spanish ship. Which one, mate? The Rosario. What, the flagship of the Andalusian squad, commanded by Admiral Don Pedro de Valdes, the Spanish sailor who actually knows what he's doing? Sure, says Drake. Want to meet him? He's my prisoner. Thing is, my dear listener, while this is another victory for Drake, he's broken ranks, which is naughty. And won't the other captains be shitty when they find out he's not going to be sharing that Spanish gold? The Rosario, incidentally, will end up being taken back to Chatham to be sunk so it can support a wharf. Now, who cares about pissed-off English sea captains? The news will get to England where we can all cheer and get on the booze and bang our loved one and say that Drake has done it again for England. For our English fleet, though, this will make them more cautious when the Rosario is inspected and we see just how many guns and munitions it has. What they don't know is that the Rosario was not typical of the Armada. It was very special. Even Drake is up for more of the same, nipping at the heels of the Armada-type stuff and looking for the slowest ship in the herd to surround and knock out. Good fun, but that's not going to inflict any sort of killer blow. 23rd of July and the Armada is off Portland Bill, which I think is still in Devonshire, where the jam is always on top. And well done, Devonshire, for that. Wind will change, and the Armada sees an opportunity to attack the English. English will run away, but seven ships will be trapped between the Armada and the coast. That includes Betty's own ship, the Triumph, captained by Martin Frobisher. In come some Spaniards, powered by 1,200 oarsmen. Nice target for Frobisher, and he'll start smashing them up a bit. Are you worried, my dear listener? Worry no more. It's not only about the wind, it's also about the currents, with the current forming a handy barrier for the English. Meanwhile, Admiral Howard has found himself in a dicky position. He's only got one option, attack. Nice for Howard, Drake had already seen an opportunity with a change in the wind, so he's already up the Spanish. Suddenly, it's the reluctant Drake and not Frobisher, though, who's in trouble. We're all close enough for hark buses, so it'll be bang away at each other. The light English ships can avoid grappling hooks by ducking and weaving. Wind will change and Howard can head over to those stranded ships. Some Spanish will get their rowers into gear to see if they can intercept the English, but that silly bloody San Juan power ship has got itself isolated again. In go the English once more with Drake involved. The San Juan will fire all guns at once. Spanish will then sail to the rescue with some cannon exchanges and the English will run away. When I say some cannon exchanges, it's around about 5,000 cannonballs fired. One small English ship sunk, another set on fire. 50 Spaniards dead and 60 wounded. No figures for the English. Betty put a total ban on reports of dead and injured English to keep morale up. 24th of July, and we're close to the Isle of Wight, with the English totally confident that the Spanish will look to take it and make it a naval base. On the island, Sir George Carey is on DEFCON 5. Now, the reason the English are confident that the Isle of Wight will be attacked by the Spanish is that it has a deep water port, which they're going to need. There's none at Dunkirk, so Dunkirk is a very shitty place to park an armada. It would be subject to the vagaries of the weather. No wind, so the English will get their rowers out. It's a risky business, so we'll give that away. Meantime, Frobisher's mob are back in a bad spot. They're trapped being too close to the island. His ships will get away, but Frobisher, with Betty's own ship, is cut off. He'll lower his ensign to show that he's in big trouble. He's got rowers out, but this is the biggest of all the English ships. Here comes the wind, and Frobisher will show the superior skills of the English sailors and just slip past the armada. The rest of the English will now just herd the armada away from the Isle of Wight. That's working, but the Spanish can now see Drake's cunning plan. He's looking to drive them onto the dangerous shoals of Owers Bank. That would wreck them. We will change direction, saving the Spanish, but ensuring they won't be landing on the Isle of Wight. Admiral Howard will now start knighting guys for saving the island. Hawkins and Frobisher will score. Not sure why, really. The goal of the armada is to get to Dunkirk, and we're not doing well stopping that. By the same token, the Spanish certainly aren't happy, according to their letters. They want the English to come in and attack by boarding the Spaniards. That would be a suicide mission with the Spanish ships full of hard men. If the Spaniards can't destroy the English fleet, then that operation to ferry guys from Dunkirk to England would be wide open to attack. The Spanish will ask the Duke of Parma to come out and help tow the armada back to the Isle of Wight so they can get their safe port. Duke of Parma thinks it's a dick of an idea. All he has is barges fit for rivers. These things aren't seaworthy. He's got his job, and it's up to Duke Reluctant Admiral to do his. Alexander Farnese, Duke of Parma, will go to inspect his troops who are keen as mustard to get to England. But he's already thinking this is a bit of a dud and he's just going through the motions. The armada has one more chance, the port of Calais, and that's where they're now headed. Howard will send for urgent resupply of ammunition and damaged ships or ships with no more ammunition will be sent to port for repairs and resupply. But fresh ships are coming in to join the English fleet. Drake will spot a supply ship that's got left behind and be in after her. The San Juan will spot Drake and be after him. San Juan will knock out Drake's mainmast and he's out of action. He can now contemplate just how much he hates that fucking San Juan. 28th of July, gloomy day. 8 dark shadowy shapes on the horizon. On board of these shadowy shapes are skeleton crews who will tie the ship's rudders so that they'll keep a steady course straight ahead. Then they hop over the side into their rowing boats to get the fuck out of there. Off go those unmanned ships, and they're already on fire. They have a nice supply of pitch, brimstone and gunpowder. Spanish call these things hell burners. The wind is stiff and they're moving off nice and fast, heading directly towards the crowded anchorage at Calais. Crowded with the armada in it. Out come some brave Spaniards who will manage to get two of those ships towed away, but that leaves 6 still heading in. Allow me to pause this for the fans of the Biddy, the Golden Age movie. First, if you want to know where is mighty hero Clive Owen, or Walter Raleigh really, You might recall he'd been to Ireland as part of the Desmond Rebellion gig. Part of that deal was he needed to raise men of Devon and Cornwall to go with him. And that's what he's been doing now, raising the men of Devon and Cornwall to protect the coastline of Devon and Cornwall. No mighty hero work from him on this particular gig. Next, fireships really work outside the movies. Sure, we all want to avoid them, but they're on a fixed trajectory, so you just have to dodge. The English are not expecting this to be the end of the mighty Armada, and are just hoping it will fuck up their formations. And if God truly isn't an Englishman, then maybe, just maybe, one or two Spaniards will run aground. If this works at breaking up formations, then we'll be in there with Howard heading one way and Drake the other. Calais for the Spanish was not the best port for them, but right now it's the only port. Calais at this stage was considered neutral, but the commander was a Catholic who hated the English. He'd been there back when the Frenchies took Calais back from the English, and he'd lost a leg in that battle. He's helped the Spanish with their communications to the Duke of Parma, who wrote back saying, "I'm not ready yet, and my guys are getting rather sick." That's not encouraging, because the Armada now has to manage a part of the channel where the currents are strong and want to send ships not to Dunkirk but to the North Sea, and that's not where the Armada wants to go. Both the Duke of Parma and Duke Reluctant Admiral can now see this plan is pretty much a dud. The troops will have to be ferried from Dunkirk to Calais, and even if the Dutch fail to kill them on the way, there's still English warships looking to do them over. Message in to Phil to let him know this is going to be totally dicky. He will note on the letter, "Please, God, let there be no slip-up with this." There's going to be a slip-up, Phil. Okay, in come those hellburners. There's fires and explosions and a nice bit of chaos. The port of Calais requires you to have two anchors out, one at the front and one at the back, otherwise the current will just miss you about. Now, this part of the Benny movie is right. Captain said, "Just cut the anchor ropes, we need to get out." Great, all you have to do now is manoeuvre past the other panicking ships. Now, to be fair, five ships kept their cool, pulling up their anchors, moving a bit to avoid the fire ships and then just setting anchor again. One ship will be wrecked on shore, but those fire ships will just sail on in, missing everything, and also run ashore to just burn out. The English objective, though, has been met. The Armada is scattered. Monday, 29th of July, 1588, and the Spanish Armada is looking to get back into formation. They're going to need to do that because today is the day of the decisive battle of the campaign. The Battle of the Grey Lines, coming very soon to this very podcast. Sampler there of Popova and Aguirre to get us into some historical fiction. Now, Walter Raleigh is getting excited about the concept of El Dorado, and plenty of people did. It's one of those legendary things that doesn't exist, but it's the city of gold somewhere in South America, which you may know is a pretty big place to go looking for something. So lots of people did, and lots of people didn't return, because it's also rather tricky territory. So this week, it's a movie, Aguirre, Wrath of God, by Werner Herzog. I think it's the first Werner Herzog movie I saw, and it's just brilliant. Now, this thing's made in 1972, so you know, bear in mind that filmmaking techniques have improved. But Werner Herzog was very innovative. Now, this is one of five movies that Werner Herzog made with Klaus Kinski as the star. Werner Herzog was very interested in the theme of madness, and if you're going to make a movie about mad people, Klaus Kinski's a pretty good choice, because he might have been friggin' mad himself. We're looking for El Dorado, so of course this is madness combined with greed, and that is a really toxic mix. Now, I just pulled it up on Rotten Tomatoes just to see its score. It scores 96% approval rating. There you go, 96%. So if you've never seen a Werner Herzog movie, this is a good one to get into. Aguirre, Wrath of God, made in 1972. But for us, it's just a matter of what we go out with. About the same time Aguirre, Wrath of God was coming out, Tangerine Dream released their fifth album, Phaedra. Phaedra's based on an old Greek story where she wants to bang a stepson and he says, oh no. So she goes to her husband and says, yeah, he raped me. So dad's going to kill son. Very unhappy. But that's what Greek stories are all about. They're all about unhappiness. But we'll go out with a little bit of Phaedra from Tangerine Dream. Hope to see you next time. Bye.